Do you know the number one thing that surprises engaged couples? Take a guess. The sheer amount of decisions they have to make while planning a wedding. Indoors or outdoors? How many guests? Are kids invited? Controversial. Which cake flavor? Seriously, how do you even begin to figure out what's right for you? That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to make every wedding decision a piece of cake, from choosing your dream wedding venue and vendors to deciding how to best spend your budget. With tons of customizable wedding websites, save the dates and invites, every detail will feel like you. Zola will even help you choose the gifts, experiences, and cash funds you really want. The next thing you know, you've planned your whole wedding all in one place. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, Bills Mafia. We know there's only one topic every day. All Bills, all the time. And now Matt Bove and Sal Capaccio are going really deep, talking Bills all year long, because it's always game day in Buffalo.
Well, as you see at the graphic at the bottom of the video side of things, it's always game day in Buffalo. 12-3, Bills survive against Patriots. Interesting word, survive.
Yeah.
Sal Capaccio, Matt Bove. Is that how you would term it? They survive against the Patriots?
I don't know if I would survive is the word I would use. I just don't think they played very well.
Me neither.
And they still won. So yeah. I don't think the sky's falling. I don't think that this is a huge deal. I think the fact that they didn't have their fastball and they were still able to win a game is probably a good sign. And that there are definitely negatives from the game, but I don't necessarily think this game changes my outlook on their potential and on the next couple of weeks or anything like that.
Well, I think that's where the big picture lies, right, Matt, which is, does this game do anything for you to change your perspective on who this team is? And look, I'm going to sound really weird because I came out of last week's game in Detroit after giving up 42 points going, hey, I think the defense played well. Mm-hmm. And then this game, they only give up 21 to New England. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if the defense played very well. I'm starting to get a little concerned now, albeit they were without several starters. I get it. So they were against Detroit. I understand that big picture part of it, but I am starting to get a little concerned. I mean, third down defense has been an issue all year.
Yeah.
And it was again on Sunday. They had long drives against them early in the game. And here's my biggest concern. They did wind up getting a couple takeaways. If the Bills don't get takeaways,
they lose.
I don't know if they're good enough to be able to sustain because they have been, it almost seems like the takeaways have kind of masked some of the defensive issues. Get the takeaways, you're fine.
Yeah.
It seems like if they don't get them, then they're in for a really, you know, a tough one.
If they don't get them, then it's the Rams game from a couple weeks ago against a competent offense where you give up 44 points. I do agree with that. As far as like a concern level goes, I am much more concerned with the defense than I am with the offense after one game where I just don't think they played fantastic, because the defense, like, the turnovers aren't a guarantee, right? Like, you get them a lot and they've had a habit of getting them, but I'm not banking on that. I'm not banking on a good playoff team giving up the ball more than once to the Bills. And the third down thing is a massive problem because they don't have a pass rush. Like, the pass rush is pretty non-existent, which is why their third down conversion rate against is really high, because they don't really get after the quarterback. Like, they just, if it's not Greg Rousseau, nobody's getting there.
Yeah, and that showed up on the stat sheet on Sunday. I thought they did a good job to flush Drake May a few times. They got some pressure on Drake May. He actually, I thought he looked pretty good himself. But yeah, they didn't get home enough. There were certain times, I know in the radio broadcast, Eric Wood kept saying, oh my gosh, Von Miller is just crushing the right tackle, but he just can't get home. Like, he's beating him all the time. But yeah, when you give him a mobile quarterback, somebody gets rid of the ball fast, you know, that's going to mitigate that for sure. All right, so let's run through some of the good and the bad. Let's start with our concerns. Let's start with the bad. Then we'll wind up with the good and, you know, finish on a high note if we can. Again, the defense for me now, listen, I would say, I think out of Rasul Douglas, Taylor Rapp, DeMar Hamlin, Matt Milano, out of the Dwayne Carter, interesting that he, you know, was also a guy that wasn't playing in this game. I think of all these guys, if this was a playoff game or a critical regular season game, I kind of get the feeling maybe all of them would have played. I'm not really sure. Mm-hmm. Feels to me like they are kind of just erring on the side of caution, not load management yet, but just making sure, look, we're just not going to risk anything.
Yeah, I think all of that, and I think that Baylen Spector wouldn't have played, Dorian Williams would have played in Matt Milano's place, but even Matt or even Dorian Williams is banged up, so they were trying to limit his snaps a bit until the game got dicey, and now Baylen Spector gets hurt and leaves, but Dorian Williams goes in, and I actually thought played pretty well. I do think that they were erring on the side of caution with all of these. Maybe they're a little too confident that they would just be able to beat the Patriots, a team that's not playing well, a team that's, you know, really focused on the future, even without all of those guys. And then it turned into a little bit more dicey than any of us would have thought. I mean, they fell behind 14-0 to the Patriots. Like, that's not good. So yeah, it was probably a little bit too close for comfort. Maybe the defense looks different with those guys, but I don't really think it does a whole lot, because to me, they were losing at the line of scrimmage. It's not like they were losing a ton at the second level or really even the middle. I mean, they attacked Baylen Spector for sure. I mean, it felt very clear early in the game. The players they were attacking were Baylen Spector, Cam Lewis, and Kyrie Elam. And Cam Lewis makes a big play and gets an interception that changed the outcome of the game. But yeah, they just kind of could do what they want against those other two.
Yeah, Spector and Elam, I agree for sure. They were really targeting Spector in the passing game at weak side linebackers. You said he's normally a Mike linebacker, middle linebacker. He's playing the weak side, so he has to be in coverage a little bit more, and that's just not where his strong suit lies. So people were asking me, someone asked me on X, they said, well, why was Dorian Williams being punished? No, what you said is true, which is Dorian Williams, excuse me, was dealing with an injury of his own. So the Bills decided to try to limit his snaps. So they started bailing Spector in his spot, and
bless you.
Sorry about that.
We're feeling
over being sick. Yeah.
We're feeling the effects of it being winter and spending time outside and like
outside in that game 4 hours in, you know, 10-degree weather basically. But you're right. So there's a concern for me. The other one is Kyrie Elam, and boy, if he has to get pressed into duty, it just, how can you have any confidence? Because it just seems like, yes, I know he's made some big plays in games. I get it. But I'm not super confident if he has to be on the field for, you know, 65 defensive snaps
against a good wide receiver, right? Like, it's not like this was an absolute gauntlet of talent as far as the New England Patriots receivers are concerned. But what if you get into the playoffs and you're going against the Ravens or something, and all of a sudden you got Bateman and Zay Flowers and those tight ends? Like, I don't know how that would go. That would be a really potential mismatch for the Bills. So I do think that this is more of them being overly cautious with a guy like Rasul Douglas, with obviously their safeties, but it does bring up some depth concerns for a defense that's already dicey at best, even when fully healthy.
All right. Offensively, Josh Allen didn't have the cleanest performance. I also don't think it was necessary on Josh Allen. Statistically, he didn't. I didn't think Josh played a bad game, but he certainly didn't have a normal Josh Allen game. This wasn't an MVP caliber type of game. He had one interception. It was more like what we call an arm punt, right? I don't think he really cared. He just wanted to see if I'll try and see if something can happen. It didn't. Otherwise, it's not like he was misfiring all the time, but this was not a typical Josh Allen performance, in part because the offense didn't really have many chances early in the game. They had one drive in the first half. I think they first quarter. I think they had three drives total in the first half.
Yeah, and he wasn't getting a ton of help, right? Like, there was a lot of plays when it just didn't feel like they were getting separation, the wide receivers. Right. And there was also missed opportunities, right? Like, he had a dime to Khalil Shakir rolling out to his side, put it right in a bucket at the end of the first half, and it just went through Shakir's hands. It was a play that he probably normally makes. There was also a contested ball that he threw to the back of the end zone to Shakir. That would have been a really tough catch to make, but it's not impossible for a player like him to bring that ball down. So I just think that there were missed opportunities all around. I definitely agree with you. It was not a good game for Josh Allen. I don't think it was a disastrous game for him. It was a meh, whatever game, but go look at the box score. His leading receiver in this game was James Cook with 26 yards. So that's not a recipe for a ton of success. And I mean, go down the list. 26 yards for James Cook, 25 for Matt Collins, 22. Yeah. This number from Khalil Shakir is crazy. 6 targets, 2 catches, 22 yards. Like, he has been Mr. Efficient for them. He has 2 catches, and on one of the catches, he fumbled it. He was able to recover it. But yeah, it just wasn't really a good game for really anyone offensively, probably besides James Cook.
James Cook is probably the best offensive player on the field for the Bills, at least, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So his day, as you just said, 100 yards exactly on the dot on only 11 carries, 9.1 yards a carry. Obviously, the 46-yarder helps out with that. Josh Allen, 16 of 29. That's only 55%. On the day total. James Cook also contributes 3 catches for 26 yards. I don't know where they are without James Cook in this game, because that 46-yard run really kind of once that happened, were you like me? Like, once the 46-yard run happened for a touchdown, I kind of knew, like, okay, the Bills are going to win this game. The question is just, how are they going to win it and by how much?
Yeah, no. Okay. No, I don't think I felt that way. I felt that way after, I was going to say the Cam Lewis interception. But I don't even know if at that point, because it was still just a field goal game. I mean, obviously, when they had the fumble lateral to Ramondre Stevenson and then they got a touchdown, I was like, okay, yeah, they're going to definitely win this game. I didn't feel super confident about it, though, until like the middle of the third quarter. I thought there was a chance they would just give it up too much.
All right, Matt Bove, Sal Capaccio here. It's always game day in Buffalo. You can subscribe to us on audio wherever you pod, and of course in the Odyssey app, Spotify, iTunes, all that, wherever you pod normally. And of course, you can watch us and our faces on the Sal Sports YouTube channel. So go to YouTube at Sal Sports. What else good in this game came out of good? Anything good? Actually, you know what? Let me pivot. Let me start. Let me go back to the negatives. There was more negative than positive, I guess, in this game.
Yeah, a lot more.
The fake punt to give up. Mm-hmm. Another special teams miscue, and I say it because even Sean McDermott pointed out they basically didn't have the right personnel in the field. How does this keep happening?
Because they haven't made a change, and I don't think they will until probably after the season, unless they win the Super Bowl, and then obviously that wouldn't happen. But I feel like I've pointed back to special teams for more problems than good things this year, and that's not unique to, you know, or that's not like this is the only year where that has happened. So that is a concern. I'll say the counter to that is that I actually thought Tyler Bass did a good job today.
Yes. Right?
Doesn't miss any kicks, had a long one. So that definitely matters, obviously. But yeah, just like that can't happen if you have the wrong personnel on the field. And I'm sure the Patriots saw that and then attacked right there. Right? Like, it's just letting bad teams keep themselves in games is a way that eventually you lose games. And the Bills are lucky today that they did not.
Also, on special teams, they had the penalty on Quentin Morris. Now, they called it illegal formation. I haven't gone back and looked. Did he leave early? Is that why they called that? Was it illegal formation? If it's illegal formation and he lined up wrong, there's literally no excuse for that. He left early, that's on him. Yeah. If it's illegal formation, that's on him and coaching. So I have to go back and see, but that's another special teams mistake that they made right there.
They had 13 penalties today, Sal.
Yes.
13 penalties. Like, that's
how about two of them on Spencer Brown?
Yeah.
And I went back and looked because I said, I think they were both pretty big. One of them wiped out a 10-yard first down catch by Keon Coleman.
Yep.
The other pushed him out of field goal range, actually.
Yep. Yeah, they were two bad ones. And that was the thing. It was just like self-inflicted wounds after self-inflicted wounds continuing to hurt them. I would imagine that these are things that they clean up. But that's almost why, in a way, like having this happen now and still getting a win is kind of the perfect storm.
Sure.
Like, you don't want to struggle. You don't want to squeak out wins, obviously. But I do think that makes you focus on the details a little bit more of like, okay, we cannot take these penalties, especially in these crucial moments, especially the pre-snap ones. So I do think that these will be things that are, you know, a little bit more refined as we get into the playoffs.
Do you think Josh Allen hurt his MVP chances after today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. But I still think he's the MVP. And I would say that because...
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, like, he was minus 900, which is ridiculous. Like, I think back to... There was a Tom Pelissero article at NFL Network this week, and he had 27 executives interviewed, front office league executives. Did you see this?
I did not.
So he interviewed 27 front office executives and 17 general managers and asked them who the MVP was, and 22 of the 27 voted for Josh Allen. And I can't imagine that having an meh game would make, I don't know, half of those people be like, yeah, he's not the MVP. What he did for the last month was absolutely absurd. And if you just look at the box score, which some people do, then he's not the MVP. But you know what's funny about that? If you just looked at the box score last year, then he would have been the MVP,
right?
And he didn't win it last year. So, you know, right or wrong, it is very much a perception award. It is very much a, what have you done for me lately? And Josh Allen is the only guy who has beaten the Chiefs this year. He's the only guy who's beaten the Lions, or not the only guy, one of two guys who have beaten the Lions this year. He has the jump towards the pylon in the snow, the iconic photo. He has the run against Kansas City that Jim Nantz calls the play of the year. Like, when people think of Josh Allen this year, casual football fans, they think of him more than they think of Lamar for like these spectacular moments. And I think that that plays into it. So my guess is Monday morning, he's the favorite to win the MVP. But instead of being minus 900, maybe he's minus like 300 now.
Yeah, I agree with that. And by the way, the only problem is it's not the GMs who vote on the award. It's the Associated Press writers who have their votes. And you would hope that they would feel the same way
well,
in this particular case.
That's even more to the narrative point, right? Because Josh Allen has done this in windows where people are watching football.
Yep.
If you're not covering a game at that exact moment and you're watching football, it's like, okay, the Chiefs is a 425 game. 32 million people watch it. A couple weeks later, he goes off against the Lions in one of the highest rated games of the year, the Sunday night football game against San Francisco in the snow. Like viral, big moments. And that plays into it. And maybe it shouldn't, but it does. It's just the way the award works.
So the Bills in this game also wind up keeping pace with the Kansas City Chiefs, but I don't know how much it really matters with the Chiefs really only needing one win.
Yeah.
Now, Wednesday, we're going to know. If on Christmas, if the Chiefs win on Wednesday, they lock up the one seed. The Bills can't catch them. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Bills just should start dialing guys back a little bit then next week, if that's the case?
If
the Chiefs win and lock up the one seed on Wednesday, which they can do, do you think the Bills should start resting more players?
No, I don't think they should.
With 2 weeks left.
I don't think they should do that until they've locked up for sure the two seed. I think once that has happened, then we should start to have that conversation. Now, there is a chance that they could have the two seed locked up before they even play against the Jets. Now, for this to happen, they would need the Chiefs to beat the Steelers, and then they would need the Texans to beat the Ravens.
Correct.
If both of those teams lose, the Ravens and the Steelers, the Bills will be the number two seed before they have even played a game on Sunday. And I do not think that they would sit Josh for 2 weeks. I just don't. But I do think that if they had a little lead, they would probably take him out. Or if it ever got like, hey, like, he gets a little banged up, there's no way you're going back into the game. So I would say they will play their starters until they have the two seed locked up. And then once that happens, then I think we start to see them peel back a little bit.
It could also happen where the Chiefs lose and then the Bills are like, okay, well, we're going to keep playing here.
Well, that's the other thing. If the Chiefs lose, the Bills will play all of their normal people against the Jets.
Yep.
They won't do anything different. And then you wait and see how the week 18 schedule plays out. Because if the Chiefs play on Saturday to win the one seed and the Bills play on Sunday, then you could kind of pivot based off of the results of that game.
Interesting what they're going to do with those Saturday games, because here's the thing that works against the Bills in this situation. The Bengals play the Broncos. I don't think anybody wants to see the Bengals in the playoffs. So you're rooting for the Broncos. However, the Broncos win, they clinch a playoff spot. Week 18 won't matter for them against the Chiefs.
The Broncos.
Yep. So what I'm saying is, let's just say the Chiefs do lose this week, right? And all of a sudden the Bills have a look at it. Well, if the Broncos win against the Bengals, that's good. Keep the Bengals out. Uh-huh. But the Broncos are like, we got nothing to play for because we just clinched a spot. So week 18, it's kind of like, the Chiefs are going to win anyway.
Yeah, well, they might put them on Yeah, I mean, conceivably, that's
right.
But the counter there is that if the Chiefs win on Christmas Day and the Broncos lose to the Bengals, then the Chiefs will probably be sitting everybody, and then the Broncos should have
right
not a free win, but a much easier win, which would then ultimately keep the Bengals and potentially the Dolphins out of the playoffs.
Yeah, the right now there's, would be, I think
there's
right
a lot riding. There's a lot riding on these Christmas games.
Like, I still think Indy. I still think Indy has a legit shot here to get that 7 seed.
Well, they do because they play the Giants and then the Jags. But at the same time, I don't trust the Colts very much. I just don't. Like, I don't know. They almost let the Titans beat them today. They had a huge lead against the Titans. Then the Titans came back in the game.
Well, they would have to have the Broncos lose their final two games anyway for them to even be able to do it.
I mean, at one point in this game, they were up 38-7. They won 38-30.
That's right.
So, like, I know that a lot of it happens towards the end of the game. The thing that scares me a bit about the Titans as far as a matchup is concerned against the Bills, like,
John, the Titans.
Excuse me, the Colts. The thing that would concern me a bit about the Colts is that Jonathan Taylor is still cooking. He rushed for 218 yards and 3 touchdowns today against the Titans. And we've seen what, you know, running backs can do against the Bills. I know that.
I would still rather face the Colts than any of those teams in the possible.
You'd rather play the Colts than the
Because
Broncos.
The Buffalo Bills would say, we are just making sure Jonathan Taylor does not beat us. And then we'll just leave it up to Anthony Richardson. And I would have confidence the Bills would be able to handle that.
I don't disagree with that. I would say the Broncos are a bit concerning because their defense is good. And like we saw,
and their offensive line is good.
And their offensive line is good. And Bo Nix can make play. I think that I would be more fearful going against Bo Nix than I would against Anthony Richardson.
All right. Speaking of young quarterbacks, what'd you think about Drake May today?
I think he's going to be good.
Me too.
He's going to be good. And I thought that before the game.
Yeah.
So it's not like this shocked any of us. He's got flashes, right? There's some bad decision making. There's some poor throws, but there's way more good than bad. I think he is going to become a very good quarterback in this league. I don't know if he's ever going to be like elite, right? But I think he's going to be a really good quarterback.
I mean, last year I was so in love with CJ Stroud and watching him, and he hasn't progressed. You just never know with these guys from year to year. But right now he looks like the real deal. Some of those throws, I have no idea how he was able to quickly diagnose seeing somebody in his face and getting rid of the ball so quickly and on time and target today against the Bills. I thought it was super impressive for me. He can run. He's athletic. I really like what I saw from Drake May. And the Patriots, by the way, their game plan, give them credit today. You know, that's the other part about this, which is both Matt and I say the Bills didn't play very well, but I'm going to say give credit to the Patriots as well. They had a really good game plan. They came in and said, we're going to make sure the Bills don't have the ball, keep their offense off the field. And look, the Bills have to make plays. They didn't. The Patriots in the first half, all right, they controlled it. They had 239 yards of offense in the first half, 5 of 8 on third down. I just think the Patriots had a good game plan. They were running screen. They were running quick game. They were just keeping the Bills a little bit off balance. And that's a nice job by them. They don't have enough, obviously. So, you know, it didn't wind up being enough in the end for them. But give them a little bit of credit what happened today to the Bills as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought that they did a lot well in this game. I still think that obviously they've got a long way to go.
Yep.
But I do think that there is a foundation there built on a really promising young quarterback, and once you surround him with a solid offensive line and potentially some skill players, like, I think that could be a pretty lethal combination. We got a ton of questions. Do you want to dive into some of these, or do you have anything else you want to touch on?
I have one more thing we need to talk about: Josh Allen's injury.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Just to touch on that, or injuries in general. So,
yeah,
the reason why we didn't talk about it earlier, I guess, because it wasn't front of mind, because it doesn't seem like anything significant.
Sure,
but Josh came off the field after he had that throw that just kind of ball slipped out of his hand. He comes off the field really shaking his right hand. And we kept eyes on him and kept watching and what's going on. And he was wincing when he's throwing. It was not good, but apparently he had an elbow contusion is what it was officially diagnosed or ruled.
Yeah.
Which basically was he got hit in the funny bone, and it really caused a lot of numbness in his hand. He said he couldn't feel his hand is what it was. So that was really the extent of that, but, you know, we'll see. Also, during the game, Taron Johnson was evaluated for a head injury, but he returned. Mm-hmm. And Baylen Spector did leave with the calf injury. He did not return, but he did stay on the sidelines and was, you know, with his helmet on, walking around. So hopefully he'll be okay.
Yeah, I think that the biggest win from the game is that the Josh Allen injury did not turn into a bigger injury, and that Correct. It does not like seem like it's going to impact him. But I also think that that might make them more overcautious with him. Like, let's take a walk down memory lane here. Even in their years where they have clinched a playoff spot and not needed to play in week 18 for seeding, they have had Josh Allen in the offense play a half of football.
Yep.
I could see a situation this year where they don't have that happen. They're like, Josh,
Agreed.
They'll probably have him play a series. Like, you're going to go out and play a preseason game. You're going to go play a series. And then after that, you're not playing again. We know we're the 2 seed or the 3 seed or whatever it is. So, yeah, I mean, it's not great to hear that your starting quarterback couldn't feel his hand for 5 to 10 minutes. But given the nature of the injury and also just how bitterly cold it was, I guess that shouldn't be like a huge shock either.
What do you got for questions?
I get a lot of questions. Here's a good one from Phil. Dorian over Milano yet? And I think it's a really interesting question.
Well, I you mean like for the rest of this year?
Yeah, like if they're both
healthy. When Matt's healthy, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
No,
I don't. But should it?
I like Dorian, but I still think he's a very big liability in coverage.
Yeah.
And I just think the Bills feel that Matt is much better in that area, and he can still be very effective against the run. I don't know. It's a tough. I don't think so. I think it should be Matt Milano when fully healthy. I still think he is the better linebacker when he's healthy. I don't think he's all pro Matt Milano right now, but I still think he's the better option on the field than Dorian Williams.
What's more important, resting starters week 18 or the 2 seed? That's from Garrett. I would say Garrett, there's a chance you could do both, but that resting would require
two.
Yeah. I mean, I think resting
is probably more important. Because the 2 and the 3 are going to match up either way in the second round.
Uh-huh.
If you get to the 3, the difference is where the game is, which is important. But
that matters, I think.
To me, playing that extra game, and because of what happened, I'm so spooked about last year, Matt, and those guys getting hurt in the AFC Super Wild Card Weekend game against the Steelers.
Yeah.
So I think resting is more important, but the 2 seed is still important to me because you're guaranteed 2 games at home. As long as you win the first, you know, you're getting another one, and maybe the 1 seed gets knocked off and you're hosting the AFC championship.
You know what today also did? We should have probably mentioned this. So it guaranteed that the Bills won't be anything lower than the 3 seed, which is an interesting layer in all of this because of where the Chiefs are going to fall as either the 1 seed or the 2 seed, but most likely the 1 seed. Like, the Bills will not play the Chiefs until the AFC championship. Like, if they get there, then they would play them. But the Bills mathematically just wouldn't play or go to Kansas City until the AFC championship. So at that point, like, you would sign up for that. If you're a Bills fan and you're listening to this right now and it's on the road at Kansas City in the AFC championship, I think you are signing on that dotted line right now in a heartbeat. Would you agree?
If you want to not play them at all?
No. Like, if you knew that you had to play the Chiefs, but you definitely were playing the Chiefs in the AFC championship, I'd still sign up for that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Get me to the AFC championship. I would sign
That's
up for
I
that.
That's what I mean. You're a win away from the Super Bowl at that point.
I think the bigger question here for a lot of fans is, you know, are you going to avoid the Ravens at all? And that's really still to be determined.
No, it doesn't
based
look
on
good.
How that's going to fall with the Steelers and that division. And because the winner of that division is going to get 3 and the loser is going to get 5, which is interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the best case scenario for the Bills, best case, is that the Steelers win the division and they are the 3 seed, and then the Ravens are the 5 seed, and then they are playing probably the Texans. Not probably, they would play the Texans.
Yeah.
And I think they would beat the Texans, and then they would play the Chiefs in the divisional round. So that means if you win, you're gonna play one of them, but you'll only play one of them, and it would be in Buffalo if the Ravens win. So, like, if that's the case, then, hey, like, you sign up for that in a heartbeat, too. So that's why the Christmas games are so interesting, because there is a lot on the line, and the Ravens have a much, or I shouldn't say much easier, but an easier path to the division, because they play the Texans, and then they play the Browns. So, like, you would think that they've got that under wraps. The Steelers play the Chiefs, and then they play the Bengals. So those are two tough games to close out.
And I'll give credit to my friend Brian Jopp, who texted me and said, just so you know, if the Bills win next week, it'll be their first time they've gone undefeated at home through an entire season since 1990, their first Super Bowl year.
Wow. And they went to the Super Bowl that year.
They did.
Yes. Okay. All right. Couple little ones here. Somebody asked if the Bills should claim Deontay Johnson. I wouldn't even think about it.
No,
I don't. I
like
don't.
Three teams already said we don't want you, and two of them are teams that, you know, would have every reason to want a guy like that.
Exactly.
The Steelers and the Ravens.
Somebody said, could either of you make a drop kick from the 20? I don't think I could.
No, kicking is not my thing. I'm just not good at kicking. I can throw, I can catch, I can't kick. Soccer was never my sport. Unless you put me in goal because I can catch the ball, but that's about it.
This is a good one. How do we know if the Bills will win the Super Bowl? It's a great question. I don't know. You believe in like Christmas miracles or something?
Have you, how do we know if they're going to do it? I guess you just have to watch in the second Sunday in February there, though, you know, watch the game on TV in New Orleans.
Pray, I guess. I don't know. This is a good one from Matt. I really like this question. When a team is, quote, saving part of the playbook for the postseason, what does that really look like?
By the way, what is something that maybe.
Well, that's what Josh alluded to a little bit. When a team is saving part of the playbook for the postseason, what does that really look like? Is it plays, alignments, entire personnel packages? What do they all save? I have an answer to this, but you can start if you would like.
Yeah, I think it's situational football more than anything.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say it's adjustments. It's adjustments.
Yeah, like what you do on like, okay, we really have a critical third and three. If you've noticed this year, when they have some critical fourth downs, especially, there's some special play designs where there's some orbit motion, and then, you know, maybe like James Cook against Miami out in the flat. Like, just how about Ty Johnson?
Ty Johnson wheel route against Detroit.
Right. These are things that you save for certain moments, and maybe you don't use them in these games in those situations. But it could also be that other stuff, which is, there's a few things, a few personnel packages that maybe you haven't used a lot of this year, and you want to use a little bit more of when the time comes, because teams won't be ready for them, and you can pick your matchups.
Yeah, it's a lot of that. It's also just a lot of situational football, right? Like, you're not going to see Josh Allen scrambling or diving or trying to do crazy stuff in the next 2 weeks or today. I think that they are protecting him now from himself. And then the minute you get to the playoffs, that's when that gets unleashed. It's like, oh, third and 14. Well, if I don't have somebody down the field, I'm just going to start running around and trying to bounce off people. So I do think it's a little bit of that. I also thought that was interesting today. He said that the Patriots played more man coverage against them than they thought they were going to. And I think they might have had a couple answers to that man coverage, but they didn't want to start using them now, because I think that if they see that in the playoffs, that's when they would go to that. You know, it's funny. Ryan Fitzpatrick actually responded to my tweet of the video and said,
what video?
I posted the video of Josh Allen saying basically like they want to keep some things, you know, like for the playoffs. He said, if this is the case, I would love to see Josh be intentional about throwing it to Amari every time it's a one-on-one to continue working on that game time chemistry, which I think is a good point. I mean, he's a former NFL quarterback and a very smart person, so he makes good points. But my question was, do you think it's possible they're using him as little as possible to unleash him in the playoffs? Like, do you think it's like, oh yeah, we're barely going to use Amari Cooper because we know in the playoffs, like, we'll be able to?
No, I don't think that. But I'm going to say it this way, which is a little different. I do think that in the playoffs, I might lean on him more, but I don't think it's intentional not to now. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah.
That's what I think will happen.
This is my last question. It's a good question. It's a fun question. I don't know the answer to this, but somebody asked how it works on the team charter. Does like everybody go in the same spot? Is everybody always in the same sit? Like, let me find the exact question, because they worded it better than I am.
Very good question. I remember someone.
I've always been curious. What's the seating situation like on the team charter? Does everyone sort of always sit in the same seats? Where do the players and coaches and media usually sit? Mixed in or all in sections?
Okay, so first of all, the only media on the team plane is actually me. Unless you want to count Chris Brown and Maddie Glad, which you should, I guess, because when Maddie says she doesn't go on a lot of the trips, but they're media, but they're Bills employees. I am not. I am the only non-Bills employee media, because we have the radio rights. So I'm part of the radio broadcast crew. So obviously we go to the games. Mm-hmm. So just to clarify that here, it's a great question. The answer is every coach structures their plane differently.
Oh yeah.
I've been through three or four different head coaches and it's all different, but generally first up in first class, it's a chartered plane. So we fly Delta. It's a Delta plane, but it's just the team that's on the plane. Mm-hmm. And you have assigned seats. When you check in, part of the airport, you check in, they give you a little tag, a little piece of paper, says what seat you're on. When you get there, you go to that specific seat. Generally, for most coaches, you have the head coach, GM, front office, and coaches in first class, and some players. But that is truly the one thing I've noticed that varies. Some are the captains. Some do it the longest tenured players. Some don't have any players in first class. Mm-hmm. Then in the middle, generally of all the ones I've been in, are staff, me, team trainers, doctors, video staff, assistant coaches, other assistant, not even assistant coaches are generally up in first class, but those kinds of staff. And then in the back of the players. And there's not really, it's not really much mingling that goes on. But like, if I want to get up to go get something in the back, I can walk past the players, but I'm not stopping and talking to them. There's not a lot of that that goes on. And people always say to me after a win or even after a loss, what was the flight like? And I say the same thing. It's quiet. Everybody's tired, man. They just played a football game. Everybody's trying to sleep, you know? So yeah, that's how it's structured. Actually, the best answer is that every coach is different, actually. Every coach just has his own philosophy of how they want the plane. When Doug Marrone was coach, there were a couple times we took this really big plane with an upper deck, right? And really cool. And actually, it was really cool because he put us up in the upper deck. He put the whole team on the bottom. So we were up in the upper deck, just meeting. We had these nice, like, reclining chairs. I was like, this is amazing, right?
Yeah.
So, but that was because he wanted to be down low with that the team should be together down low, and nobody from the team itself, players or coaches, should be up away from everybody.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have to sit next to somebody or do you have space?
It totally depends. Some planes are chartered smaller. Some are bigger. Generally, the regular trips are a smaller plane, and I generally do sit next to somebody, but not always. It's usually a 2-4-2 seating, yeah. And I'll sit next to somebody in the two, but I could be in the four where there's a U space. On the longer flights to the West Coast, it's a bigger plane generally, and I almost always don't have someone next to me.
Ooh, that's nice. And then how's would you get food? Is there snacks?
Yeah, they get a lot of food. You get food on the way on. You get drinks, food. There's just snacks. You just grab them when you want. There's lots of candy, lots of chocolate. There's sandwiches, things like that. So
yeah,
And then on the longer flights, they'll offer you a meal too. But they take care of you really well. Let's just say that.
Yeah, on American Airlines, usually I get a little bag of peanuts, sometimes nuts, or sometimes pretzels, and a half of a can of Diet Coke. Usually is kind of my go-to. So it sounds like we've got similar experiences.
it's quite interesting. And listen, I always say like, it's great because, you know, I get home so quick and all of that. The one thing that sometimes I get a little envious of you is you get to go to these cities before I do.
Yeah.
And you get to spend a whole day and a night because I'm on the team charter. You know, we always fly in. Basically it's timed out where we get to the hotel of the city we're going at about 3 to 4 PM the night before the game. So there's really not much time in the city you're going. It's a business trip, right? They say that all the time. It's right. You're in, you stay overnight, and then you're out after the game. But you know, you could go and say, oh, I want to spend an extra night in Miami or in San Francisco or Seattle or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, that's what we did in Seattle this year. It was like, oh, take a couple off days in Seattle and just fly out there on Thursday. Exactly. And then you get to enjoy the trip. So, yeah, that is definitely a perk. But your perks definitely outweigh mine, for sure.
It's pretty cool. No doubt. But it's it does vary, just to go back to what the person asked. And I remember one time, someone said to me, who was applying to be a head coach in the NFL, they said, yeah, if I've ever become a head coach, no player will ever sit in first class. They're all the same. And I always thought that was interesting because, like, it's just that's that coach's preference on how they think. Now, maybe they would massage what they think about over the years based on different things, but every coach has their own way of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a fair philosophy, but it's also a stupid one because not every player is the same.
Right.
And I would rather have, if I was a head coach of the Buffalo Bills, Josh Allen be comfortable than insert player here be comfortable. But that's just my, you know, thought. Maybe I don't know anything. We should close out by just wishing everybody a happy holiday, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not recording on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. We're just not. So this is going to be the last time we talk to you until after the holidays.
Yeah, for sure. So, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays. We will talk before the new year.
Yes.
But yeah, Happy Holidays to everybody out there. Matt, You have an amazing Christmas with your daughter, and I hope Santa brings her everything that she wants.
Yes. Well, the rumor on the street is that there's a nice kitchen coming to Grand Island, and she loves, and apparently it takes 3.5 hours to assemble. So I think Santa is going to drop it off, and then Daddy's going to have to put it together in the middle of the night on Christmas Eve.
I love that. Absolutely. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate it. You can always download and listen to us on wherever you pod. And of course, you can watch us on the Sal Sports YouTube channel.
One other thing. Also, the first night of Hanukkah is the evening of Christmas. So happy Hanukkah and Merry Christmas, because those are both on the 25th. And then Kwanzaa is the next day, 26th. So cover all of them. Happy holidays to everybody.